What are some practical and personal issues facing many single men and women? And how can singles live secure in Christ? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is Hello, My Name is Single. It's written by regular guest Adrian Dorr Heinz. Hello, My Name is Single is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you could find out more about Hello, My Name is Single at issuesetc.org.
Once there was a world, not so very different from our own. There were occasional natural catastrophes, massive volcanic eruptions, and every once in a while, an asteroid would come barreling out of the blue to do some damage. But for the first billion years or so, it would have seemed like a paradise. This is what we think the planet Venus might have looked like when our solar system was young. Then, things started to go horribly wrong.
Just a little bit of Sunday night's episode of Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. The episode, if you watched it, started out talking about the planet Venus. That seems cosmological to me as well. There is Venus, our nearest neighbor in space, a twin in many ways to Earth, although a fair bit closer to the sun, something that didn't seem to figure much into the scenario they were spinning there about Venus. And a cautionary tale was spun that the Earth could end up just like Venus, a nearly molten world of hot gas and completely inhospitable to life. It could happen to us through the greenhouse effect. Why does this subject of the greenhouse effect continue to come up again and again and again in the 11, well now 12 episodes of this TV series, Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, a series ostensibly dedicated to the study of space and the universe, spending so much time talking about greenhouse emissions here on Earth? Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Danny Faulkner will join us here for the first few minutes to review Episode 12 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. A little bit later, Dr. Jennifer Oback Morse of the Ruth Institute will talk about the issuing of same-sex marriage licenses in Illinois that began just either yesterday or today, I believe. I think it was today. And some comments made by Pope Francis on marriage and children and don't let your pets become your kids, I think is the gist of what he was saying to married couples of all ages. And a sermon review coming up in the last few minutes of the program, a sermon preached by Pastor Peter Bender this last Sunday on Jesus' high priestly prayer in John chapter 17. You can join us for the next hour. Our call-in number 1-877-623-MY-IE. 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Joining us to review the last Sunday's episode of Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, Dr. Danny Faulkner. He has a PhD in astronomy from Indiana University. He's professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. Dr. Faulkner, welcome back.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
You've watched every single one of these episodes rather intently, I imagine, and I can already, just from recollection of our conversations with you, recall a number of times, maybe even close to a dozen times, that the issue of greenhouse gases and carbon footprints and emissions have come up in the course of this series. Why does it come up so often in a TV series that's ostensibly about studying the universe together?
Well, it's kind of veered off into a different direction most of us would not have anticipated. They made a slight connection to Venus in the first 2 minutes or so, and then, as you said, went off into this other subject. This is a great cause today. I mean, it's supposedly about science, but there's a huge political agenda here. As people in the press, people in government, all sorts of forces are marshaling against this because they're trying to convince everyone that we're about to destroy the planet. So it's a great crusade to prevent that from happening, and pushing all sorts of solutions out there to prevent that. And unfortunately, most scientists have signed on to this whole agenda. I'm not one of them. There are many others, of course, who are thinking outside the box. But it is a political agenda. It's an economic agenda, and it's got a little bit of science, but not a whole lot. And I'm afraid the people that put this TV series together, Cosmos, are just really subscribing to the whole issue.
The attempt to draw a parallel between the current state of the planet Venus, which is, we should point out, a fair bit closer to the sun than the Earth is. I don't know if it actually inhabits the so-called Goldilocks zone that astronomers talk about for habitable life-bearing planets. But, of course, right now, it's a greenhouse effect completely out of control. We can attempt to land spacecraft there, but they last only minutes or hours because of the unbelievably intense heat and density of the atmosphere. But the picture was painted of an early Venus, which was a beautiful oceanic paradise that, through some sort of mechanism they didn't fully explain, became what it is today. How solid is that story they're telling?
Yeah, what he was referring to is what astronomers or planetary scientists call the runaway greenhouse effect. The Earth and Venus are very similar. They have similar size, mass, surface gravity, density, and that would all suggest a similar composition. And you see all this carbon dioxide in the atmosphere of Venus. So you have to ask the question, if the Earth and Venus are so similar, what happened to all of the carbon dioxide on the Earth? Where is it? And the answer he gave last night, though it's not real clear to a lot of people perhaps, is in the form of rocks, what are called carbonate rocks. He pointed to the White Cliffs of Dover. That's just one example. Where I happen to live now in northern Kentucky, we've probably got about a mile of carbonate rocks beneath my feet there. And it's a very common form of rock. And what they've laid out is a scenario that maybe Venus and Earth were very similar to start with. Maybe both had oceans on them, big bodies of water. And what happens is carbon dioxide does dissolve into water. To a certain extent, that gives a form of weak acid called carbonic acid that can erode away limestone. It produces caverns. And also some of that can precipitate out naturally or through biological factors. But the whole idea is if CO2 is in the atmosphere, it dissolves in the ocean, it precipitates and forms rocks. And you get a cycle where you can crush some of those rocks and heat them up in volcanic activity and return it back to the atmosphere. That was alluded to in an earlier episode of Cosmos as well. And the argument is that the Venus, being close to the sun, was initially had warmer bodies of water on the surface, if it had any bodies of water. And as it turns out, when you try to dissolve CO2 or other gases inside of water, the warmer the temperature is, the less effectively it can do that. Think of carbonation in a soft drink. It goes flat faster when it's warm than when it's cold. And that's carbonation, by the way, is just CO2 dissolved into the water. So the argument is that the CO2 was less effectively removed from the atmosphere on Venus, where it was more effectively removed on the Earth. And over time, you built up CO2 into the atmosphere as it outgassed from the planet. That caused a greenhouse effect, which warmed the planet, which warmed the oceans, which made less removal of CO2, which meant more buildup, which meant it got warmer. And that's the runaway talking about here, to the point that eventually it got so hot, boiled away the oceans, and you're left with the CO2 atmosphere. On the Earth, on the other hand, it's the carbonate rocks are where you find all the CO2. And that's, if you catch on, that's kind of an evolutionary scenario. They're assuming the Earth and Venus formed gradually over a long period of time, and the greenhouse effect had a long time to work and get this runaway taking place.
There was at least implied that if we don't take control, and I think it's probably a thinly veiled attempt to say political control, of the emissions of greenhouse gases, then Earth will be Venus. Is that a realistic prospect scientifically?
I don't think so. There are arguments made that in the past, the Earth's atmosphere, let's put my evolution hat on here just for a minute. Let's suppose that, the world is billions of years old. The evolutionary scientists claim that in the past, long before people are on the scene, the Earth's atmosphere contained a lot more CO2 than it does today. A few episodes ago, they talked about a period of time which led to mass extinctions a few hundred million years ago by that kind of mechanism that's been suggested. These are natural cycles, and the Earth survived every time, if you want to buy into this whole scenario. So to me, it's a kind of bit of hubris to think that, you know, we can put CO2 into the atmosphere and actually bring about this vast destruction. Furthermore, he mentioned this almost in passing in this episode, but the dominant greenhouse effect by gas by far in the Earth's atmosphere is water vapor. It's not CO2. And as long as you have a lot of water vapor in the atmosphere, which we do, it's any contribution from CO2 is going to be dwarfed, terribly dwarfed. So, no, I don't think there's any good scientific evidence to suggest that we're on the brink of turning the Earth into Venus. That's nonsense.
All right. So kind of the little story they wanted to tell us about the planet Venus and the possible future of the Earth is a highly unlikely, if completely implausible, one. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on kind of the general state of what was stated about global warming here right now in the 21st century? Did they overstate the case? Were they telling both sides of the story?
No, they were telling one side of the story. I mean, you could make a case for it, but then there's a good case to be made on the other side. You know, they talked about the fact that people have tried to connect warming to the sun. There's a very strong correlation between sunspot activity, going over the long term, by the way, over decades and centuries, and average temperatures on the Earth. I'm fond to point out to people that 1,000 years ago, the Earth was far warmer than it is today, by far. They were the Viking settlements on the southwest coast of Greenland. They were growing crops and grazing animals. You can't do that today. It's not warm enough. In fact, those settlements died out about 600 years ago because it turned colder again. Scandinavian ports at that time were ice-free year-round for generations, for centuries. They're iced over even today. And what was going on 1,000 years ago, by some very indirect means, we've determined, it was unusually high sunspot activity, at least compared to today. And so when Neil deGrasse Tyson talked about, you know, it's not the sun because solar irradiance has not gone up. Well, he's right about that. It hasn't gone up, the irradiance, but no one makes that claim. What we are saying is this correlation suggests the possibility that some other mechanism is working. We don't know what it is yet, that could raise temperatures when we have great sunspot activity, even though the output of the sun has not increased significantly. And so that was a bit misleading on that front. And they were misleading on other fronts, too. They talk about how the temperatures have warmed. We've been measuring accurately since the 1880s when the Weather Bureau was started, now the National Weather Service, they call it. But over the 130 years since that happened, the methods and the extent of data collection have changed dramatically. I mean, we're collecting data now like we weren't 10 years ago and 10 years before that and 10 years before that. So we've got a very inconsistent set of data that changes over time, and I think to try to compare it to, say, 1880s or 1900 or 1920s is ridiculous because there's no comparison in the coverage we have, the fine scale we have, and the precision we have.
Why do you think philosophically or in terms of worldview, the notion of global warming and of the impending human-made disaster of global warming has caught on so rapidly in the scientific community? What philosophically, what worldview gives a good home to such a prognostications?
Well, I think there's a herd mentality involved here. I see a real connection to evolutionary thinking. There's a herd mentality. The smart people are the ones that that believe this. We better believe it too. They say that it's settled science. It's a fait accompli. There's no need to discuss it anymore. In fact, if you doubt this, there's just something wrong with your mental faculties. You're a little loony. You know, there's a tremendous amount of pressure put on people to conform. Plus, there's a tremendous amount of research money. I mean, there's an unbelievable amount of money given out now for research in this subject. It's become very popular. But then for some people, it's a political motivation. As you stated earlier, if this is really a problem, then it calls for a solution that only government can make and enforce. And some people out there view government as a great good in society. They want more and more and more government. And this frightens me terribly on so many different levels. And I think that's what's driving it. It is a political agenda, not really a science agenda at all.
Dr. Danny Faulkner has a PhD in astronomy from Indiana University. He's professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. You will find a link to Answers in Genesis under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Faulkner, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Next week with him, we will review the conclusion of Cosmos, a Space-Time Odyssey. When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some time with our regular guest, Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute, talking about the issue of same-sex marriage in the state of Illinois, which is now a bona fide reality. They are issuing marriage licenses as we speak. And we'll talk about some comments made Monday by the Pope on marriage and children and pets. Stay tuned.
As sure as his resurrection, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
He meets us here, not just an empty cross, not just an empty tomb, but the very risen Christ himself, the one who is the resurrection and the life.
We'll send you a CD of this sermon and a sermon on Job for any size gift during the 50 days of Easter. Make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support during the Easter season.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Every week, Ravinelli's Restaurant and Carryout cooks up 29,000 pieces of chicken, 980 gallons of meat sauce, 310 loaves of fresh bread, and 200 fresh pies and cakes. Ravinelli's Restaurant and Carryout in Granite City, Collinsville, and O'Fallon, Illinois. Ravanellis.com, RAVANELLIS.com. Ravanellis Restaurant and Carryout.